to Minute 68 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, filling in for Tom this week is Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea podcast. Welcome back, Jay.
Hello. Thank you again for having me.
And our guest this week is Don Wistens, the author of the Great Escape Location website. Welcome back, Don.
Thank you.
So Minute 68 starts off with Hilt going to grab the kettle, and it goes all the way till Max says, "We've tried every goon in the camp." Once again, we're continuing the conversation from yesterday, where Roger and Mac are trying to convince Hilt for something. We're not sure yet what they're trying to convince him of, but they want information as to whether he's planning on going out again. Basically, they do it in a very subtle and slick way. You know, the way that they ask the... You know, they ask information. Yesterday, they discussed about, whether he was going to take Ives with him or not. You know, then Roger basically says, well, you know, it is possible for one man to get out through the wire, even get away. But he lets on that there's something else going on here. You know, he doesn't outright say it, but basically says, there are, in fact, a considerable number of people besides yourself that are trying to escape. Hello? Isn't that what Ramsey said at the beginning, that, you know, that's their goal? That, you know, every prisoner wants to escape. It's the duty of the officers to try and escape. I mean, they all tried. At the beginning, you had a whole bunch of people try it. You had even Cedric try it. You know, and later on, you know, Cedric steals a bike when thing. So I mean, Don, do you want to tell everyone about that location where he actually was able to steal that bike?
Yeah, Cedric. I think he was supposed to have a Canadian accent, but
he's supposed to be Australian.
Or even Australia.
Yeah, but it's completely understandable to not recognize it because it is terrible.
Yeah, so I came across the location for that scene, and it's actually in a place called Market Schwaben, which is east of Munich, about 20 miles away. And it's a scene where James Coburn... steals the bike, and behind there are, I think there's a church, and it was just a matter of trying to locate that church around the Munich area, because rationally, when you make a film, you can't go too far away from the centre, the various studios.
Yep.
So rationality took me to Market Schwaben, where I located where James Coburn stole the bike, and cycled off into the distance. But that distance took us further south to a place called Fusen. So where he actually carries on cycling is 100 miles away.
Oh, wow.
It's quite, yeah.
Well, he
That's
did,
quite
he,
a journey.
He did make it to Paris, didn't he?
Yeah.
But not on the bike.
No, not on the bike, but still.
I'm a cyclist, and no thank you.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thanks, Don. So when we continue with the scene, continue with the conversation that Hiltz is having with Roger and Mac, again, Hiltz, he goes, something's coming. I know there's something coming here, squadron leader. You know, what exactly, you know...
This is why I love Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
He is the best. He's one of my favorite actors. Rob and I have done a podcast episode just about his best roles before.
Yeah.
And over on the Deep Blue Sea podcast, whenever any character is just kind of busying themselves with their hands, we call it McQueening, because he's the best at just pretending to be busy or looking busy, just acting with his hands, and that grabbing the kettle, even when he's got that kettle, and just the little hand motion he does, like, come on, just make it help. He's so at ease, he's so effortlessly cool, even though he knows something's coming, he's about to get shafted, he... I could just watch him do anything and be in anything. I love, you can't take your eyes off him in this scene. He's enigmatic.
Yeah, yeah, no question. I mean, again, this whole week we're talking about just Steve McQueen having a conversation with Roger and Mac, and it's still captivating watching these scenes. You know, there's no point in this entire movie, in my opinion, where things just completely are dragging along and are boring. There's always something to see and look at and figure out what's going on.
I think McQueen was known as a reactionist, so he just reacted. And he liked the use of props, which is what Jay's just said, the kettle. I think he overdoes you know, the expression in that scene. But his background is the Meisner technique, where they have to use props to enact and make real their being in a scene. And McQueen would always say that you have to do memorable lines, you know, and he was very minimalistic in his scene, wasn't he? Which is what James just said. He relied on props to captivate an audience.
Yeah, definitely. There's no question about that. He does that in this movie the entirety of the way through. And at that point, you know, after Hiltz calls Roger squadron leader, so Roger tries to break the ice a little bit and basically says, all right, we don't need to be formal here. Just call me Roger. And he says, all right. All right, Roger. And he goes, your name's Virgil, isn't it? Or as was established earlier in the podcast, you know, we think his name is Virgil Hiltz because, you know, he's walking around with a bag that has that name on it. But it could be that he stole it from somebody and he's just going around, you know, under an assumed name. You know, it's never been proven that that's really his name, which could be why he doesn't like to be called Virgil.
I've always taken it to mean that Virgil's not like a cool name. It's not like a guy. But I like the name Virgil. So I was going to ask you, Rob, as an American, as someone who like is more familiar with like Hiltz American, is Virgil like an uncool name? Like a name that you wouldn't like?
I don't think it's an
older name.
Exactly, it's not a modern name. There's no question about that.
But this is set in the 40s. I don't know how, like, I feel like it would be more common to be called Virgil back then.
I don't think it was such a common name. I mean, it was a name that was used, but I don't think it wasn't that prolific from what I know about it. But it could be. We'll have to look that up. You know, I'll give you that assignment, Jay. You can go look that up.
Thanks.
No, but as you said, it's the whole idea that you know, he's trying to establish that he's the cool guy. You know, don't call me Virgil, just call me Hiltz. You know, it's the whole James Dean aspect of it. You know, I'm cool. My name is not that. And so Roger corrects himself and starts calling him Hiltz and basically says, well, we have maps of Germany, general maps, that is. Now, do either of you know where they were able to get maps?
My guess is Henley. That's where they got everything from.
Don, do you have an idea?
No.
Okay. I read a really interesting article that one of the things that the British intelligence did was they would smuggle in a lot of games, different things to the prisoners, and they would smuggle in chessboards, and they would have maps hidden inside of the chessboards. They were hidden in a way that they were made out of cloth. So that they wouldn't crinkle and they wouldn't move around that easily.
Nice, I like it.
So my assumption is that that's part of it. You know, that there was also the whole idea of they also had fake Monopoly games that they would send out that had different maps in them also. Depending on, you know, they would have different spots on the board that were marked, and therefore you knew which map you got, whether you got a map of Germany or a map of Italy or a map of France, things like that. So it was quite clever that they were able to do those type of things. And I'm assuming Henley got some also.
Yeah, I just imagining a game of Monopoly where it's not a square, it's actually just like a map of the surrounding area. It's really obvious.
It's not like it's a game of Risk, you know, where that's the board.
that'd be great, though. That'd be a really obvious way of doing it. Here is a map, and here are the pieces, and they all look like you.
Yes.
And here is the train station.
Yes. But no, the in Monopoly they were also made out of cloth. So sorry, yeah. they were hidden inside. It wasn't the board itself.
They didn't receive Starlight Luft 3, the board game.
Exactly. So they basically and they say, what we don't have is, and then Hiltz interrupts them and says, is a clear idea of what's 500 yards behind those trees. Which again shows that he's able to read the situation. He's able to understand what they want from him,
yeah.
Which makes it very very interesting to watch this whole scene take place. Now, I mean, they're basically stuck in an area of Poland, based on what I've seen on maps.
The original camp. The original camp is in Poland. Yes.
Yeah, I meant the original camp. I didn't mean the where they filmed it.
the original camp was in Poland. Yeah.
Haven't been to where the original camp was? Were you?
No, because Steve McQueen hasn't been there.
Ah, okay. All right. That's a good answer. That's that's very true. You'd think that in the movie they would have tried to, you know, have some real external shots from some of the areas there, but I guess as you mentioned earlier, it's a little more difficult, you know, just to go anywhere to film. You want to stay as close as possible to where you are.
Yeah, I mean, McQueen in the film does whisper Switzerland, doesn't he? And in the jump scene, you've got the Alps in the background. So, and I think the French resistance send Cedric, James Coburn, off to Spain. So it's sort of a bit of an open borderline in the film, as opposed to the original location in Poland, which would be the countries around Poland, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was is that they still got pretty far. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what they're showing, that it's still within distance. I mean, from what I can see, the closest big city to Zagin is Prague, which is in the Czech Republic now, Czechoslovakia at the time, and it's a pretty long journey to Switzerland from there. It's about 1,000 kilometers, which means.
Yeah, I was just trying to get out on my map as well. It's a long way.
I mean, according to what I just found, it's 981.5 kilometers.
Yeah, I know that the borders have changed and things since this game. This
right. When this is that's set. True. Well, but that's going via a modern freeway. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So the 11 hours that it would take nowadays to drive that probably is a little bit longer when you're going by motorcycle.
Yeah.
Being chased by lots of Nazis behind you.
And if you're trying to walk it, it would apparently, according to Google Maps, take 151 hours. It would be 736 kilometers as the crow flies.
That's less than a week. That's pretty good if you can walk that. But that's without stopping.
It's pretty good. Without stopping. Yeah, that's it. That's not great if you're being chased by, I don't know, the entire Nazi fleet.
Okay, but in the real story, most of the prisoners got out. Were tried escaping by foot, because and that was one of the reasons why a lot of them got caught was because there was snow on the ground, which makes it a little bit difficult. Yeah.
Where did they go? Oh, that way.
Follow those footprints. Which footprints? You'd have the comedian. You'd have comedians. Running around in a circle. To
good, exactly. Doubling back. Yeah.
In the film, the two tunnelers, John Layton and Charles Bronson, escaped through the port of Emden, which is in the Netherlands. But that may well be poetic imagination rather than factual. Because I suppose the Netherlands is quite a long way from Poland.
I actually believe that the two that got out, there really were three that got out. One that Cedric is based on, and the ones that Danny and Willie are based on. I'm trying to remember how they got out by boat at some point. So they did get to maybe Denmark. I think that's where they eventually got out. I'm trying to remember.
Well, they in the film they rowed this boat down in Fusen on a sort of on the river, but then in the film when they boarded the ship was in the Netherlands in the port of Emden.
It was a Swedish ship.
But that may not be factual to the truth of where they left the camp in Starluck in. Poland.
Right. No, my assumption is that's somewhat of a fabrication, like most of this movie. It takes takes the original stuff and changes it around a little bit. I'd have to go back and look at the book to try and remember where exactly they got. But I remember them getting out by steamship. I just don't remember from where. Not really sure. All right. Do either of you have anything else for this minute?
Just that Mac starts mentioning at the end that they've tried every goon in the camp. I want to know again how. What did they just try and pickpocket them for maps, or did they try and just bring up in conversation, hey, What's past those trees? Just how did they try Rigoon in the camp? I want to see these scenes. I want to see every detail. I want a whole TV series based on this. Just 2 hours on Henley just going around the camp saying, hey, what's behind those trees? What's over there? How, just because that's such an obvious conversation that they're going to have.
Yeah.
Of, like, you're planning an escape, aren't you? I can't imagine how they could have tried these goons. This is why I would have been terrible. In the camp, would be useless, utterly useless.
What do you mean?
My surreptitious asking would be like, "Hey, what's behind those trees? Tell me. Go on.
But
go on.
They would make you the surveyor, you know, with your.
They'd make. I'd be in Cedric's team. I'd be in engineering, be in manufacturing.
Yeah, that's true.
No, absolutely.
Right. So I just checked, and actually, the two prisoners that got out, they were able to get to a port called Kustrin, which is near Frankfurt. They were able to get on a ship with Swedish sailors, and they ended up getting out via Sweden.
Yeah, it's a Swedish ship that they board.
There you go.
In the film.
Yeah. There you go. Either of you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Yep.
All right, Don, do you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yep. If you go to my website, thegreatescapelocations.com, I have an email address, so if you want to say hello, I'll respond accordingly.
All right, very good, thank you. And Jay, how can people get in touch with you?
I have my own personal site is Life Versus Film, lifevsfilm.com, where it's me reviewing films I watched recently and various else.
You review films there?
Now and then. I currently, once a month, I tend to review smaller films that I've watched during the month, and none of the films I actually mean to be reviewing that are on things like the 1001 Movies Must See Before You Die list, which was my initial intention, and one day I will get halfway.
All right.
We'll see.
Great. So while you're checking all that out, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you're using to listen to the show. You can visit our Facebook group, The Cooler. You can visit us on our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. You can visit us. You can write to us on Twitter at greatescapemxm, and our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So until tomorrow, tally ho.
Tally ho.
Tally ho.